You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, scientists around the world are trying to understand what dark matter is, a mysterious substance that makes up most of the mass in the universe. We hear about an effort out of Arizona that some hope will shed light on the mystery by creating the most detailed 3D map of the universe ever. Now it's time for the August edition of Mondays with Mike. Each month, WPR director Mike Crane drops by Central Time, The Larry Miller Show, or The Morning Show to talk about what's happening on and off the air. Today, we're going to reflect on the sudden passing of a great friend and public broadcasting leader here in the state, Wisconsin Public Media Director Gene Purcell. We'll also take a look at some programming changes on the way. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions or feedback about Wisconsin Public Radio. Let us know if there's a show or type of show that you want to hear, a program you want to hear less of or at a different time, a question about what's going on at WPR or WPR.org. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Mike, welcome back to the show.
It's always good to be here with you. And one of the things I'm thinking about, Rob, is the last time we talked, I was in my home office studio. And now I'm about two studios away from you.
Right.
So getting closer.
Right. Our COVID changes. I'm in a studio. You're in a studio. We're, what, probably 20 feet away from each other, but not in the same room just yet.
That's exactly right.
Now, it's been a tough time lately here at Wisconsin Public Media with the passing of Gene Purcell, director of the whole organization. He died earlier this month after being in a motorcycle crash. Could you talk a little bit about Gene, what he meant to you as a boss, a friend, and what he meant to this organization?
Yeah, he was most of all just a great guy, but also very talented in many ways. Excuse me. But one of the things that I think our listeners will remember, because Gene often substituted here on the Ideas Network, is that he was just a great host, and that was just Gene. I will look forward to any meeting with him because I knew we'd have some kind of an interesting conversation about music, which he absolutely loved, or broadcasting, which we were both broadcasting junkies for sure. We just have loved it since we were children. And so I'll miss that. I'll miss his good advice and just miss him terribly in general. As far as his role as the leader of Wisconsin Public Media, Gene presided over our moving from the now defunct University of Wisconsin Extension and Colleges. That all got merged into the other universities. And so we're now part of UW-Madison. It's been a couple of years, and Gene was truly instrumental in making that transition go very smoothly. And one of the things that I'm thinking of, Rob, is that, you know, when someone passes, you end up learning all kinds of things you didn't know because they live different lives in a way. And so it was very moving to find that whether it was people that were his friends, people that were his colleagues, people that he maybe only met recently because of this transition to UW-Madison, everybody saw Gene in the same way as genuinely friendly, genuinely interested in you when he was speaking with you and in general. And we are in good hands with leadership, but boy, do we miss Gene.
Definitely. I mean, I'll back up everything you say. One thing that strikes me, Gene, one of his past roles was as head of our regional bureau in La Crosse. And I was lucky enough to be at a listener event and hang out in La Crosse with Gene Purcell and Maureen McCollum one time. And it was like being with a couple of rock stars. I mean, just a very beloved in the La Crosse community in particular. It was great. It was really great to see just how much love there was for them for La Crosse and from La Crosse to them. Can you talk a little more now about what happens next at WPR?
Well, we have an expectation that someone at Wisconsin Public Media, so that would be my boss, will soon be officially in charge. But in the meantime, Heather Reese, who is the associate director of Wisconsin Public Media, has taken everything on there, and she's surrounded by lots of great help, including Marta Bechtol, who's the head of our agency, the ECB, the Educational Communications Board, by John Muskowski, the head of PBS Wisconsin, myself, former directors, and everyone. So I think things are in really good hands.
If you want to learn more about Gene Purcell, why he'll be sorely missed here, there's a remembrance and news story posted at WPR.org. Talking to Mike Crane, Wisconsin Public Radio Director. It's Mondays with Mike. You can join in with your thoughts, your feedback, your questions about Wisconsin Public Radio at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Mike, going behind the scenes before we talk about some of the on-the-air stuff, a few staffing changes and shuffles here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Noah Ovshinsky, our news director for quite a while now, a new role that'll have a lot to do with what people hear on the air.
That's right. Noah is now our interim senior content director. And what that means is he's taken on a role that was one of Michael Arnold's roles. Michael is our chief operating officer, and we have a lot of operational needs as we're trying to begin reoccupying our studios and all kinds of logistics that have come up in the pandemic, and Michael's been a big part of that. So Noah is absolutely able to take it on, and he has with Verve to be in charge of our content and partnering with a whole content leadership team to figure out future structure of the content departments if we need to change it. And practically speaking, he's going to be determining things like the details of adjustments to staffing, programming, projects, et cetera, a plan for the future, and to keep our core commitments to the community front and center. And this appointment should be for between 12 and 24 months while we work through all of that.
We'll get some more changes on the way, but let's go to a caller now at 800-642-1234. Nancy is with us in Grafton. Hi, Nancy.
Well, hello. Oh, thank you, Mike. Great. I got a nice card from him, a thank you card, because he gave him a little money, I guess.
You bet.
Anyhow, I was back at church again last night at 6 o'clock, and as I was coming home, gosh darn it, can you believe it? They were playing a polka. I've been begging for a polka music on that station forever. And so I was pretty darn close to home, so I made a turn, and I came up the cemetery where my husband, for many, many years, is buried. And I opened the windows, and I turned up the volume as loud as I could. And aww. You think Bob was enjoying? There were smiles. I'm sure he was smiling too, but boy, I'll tell you, I was so happy to play hear that polka music. And I hope we can hear something like that a little more often.
Nancy, thank you so much. That must have been during Simply Folk, I imagine, Mike.
Could be, and in any case, polkas also get played on our other network sometimes in the classical music version of polkas. So I'm so happy, Nancy, that the serendipity of where you were made that request. I remember your call from before. I'm so glad that worked out. That's so nice.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Nancy, for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Randy in Madison. Randy, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm really having trouble with signal strength. For some reason, I cannot hear the station more than 4 or 5 feet away from the radio. And sometimes I just have, if I really want to hear something, now this is on
90.9
WHA. Okay. And when I really want to hear something, I have to stand by it and be a human antenna.
Oh, no.
So that means I can't really do anything else around my home.
Just have to stand and turn a little bit north or whatever.
Oh, no.
to do it. I have an idea, Randy. The 90.9 signal in Madison has a very small signal. So there are at least two other dial positions you might try. The first one I'd recommend would be 107.9, which I've found has a much bigger signal and might be stronger and not require the human antenna part. 90.7 out of Milwaukee does well for some people from the Delafield-Milwaukee signal. And there are a couple of others around. So typically, but not always, those are in the lower numbers of the dial, and you might search that way. But 107.9 is probably your best bet.
Thanks a lot for the call, Randy. And AM 970, I've been able to listen well into northern Illinois. So if you all else fails, go AM with that. It's the August edition of Mondays with Mike with WPR director Mike Crane. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to ask about Wisconsin Public Radio on the air or behind the scenes? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your questions, your comments. Or you can post, by the way, on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. It's Mondays with Mike, with WPR Director Mike Crane, talking about all things WPR. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, feedback, comments. Tell us what's on your mind as far as WPR programming and operations are concerned. Let us know what kind of things you want to hear. You can also ask about why we do stuff the way we do. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go back to your calls now. Pete is with us in Peshtigo. Pete, hello.
Hello, and hi, Mike. I had just a comment. I want to just give a shout out to how much I enjoy JC and Lee when they fill in. They just do such a fantastic job, and Teely Boltina did the same thing. I haven't heard her for a while, but I just love how they can guide a guest and let the guest talk and give his information, and they'll guide them back if they have to, but they don't go cracking a bunch of jokes and laughing around. So I like the professionalism of those two. I hope they can be on the air more.
Thanks, Pete, for the call. Mike, our fill-in host he's talking about, and some reshuffling going around.
That's right. Keely, at the moment, has taken on an interim role as the head of the Ideas Network because Cheryl Gasser is taking an extended time away. And so J. Carlisle Larson, JC, took over for her for a while. And probably the pieces will all move around again in a few months. But I have to tell you, and whether it's JC or Lee or Keely or almost anybody here at WPR, people are very adaptable and willing to try to help each other out and so on. And so even if it isn't someone's official role, you can expect you might hear such folks. And I know they'll be pleased to hear how much you like them.
We'll definitely pass that on. Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. You can join in with your questions or comments for Mike Crane, Wisconsin Public Radio Director. The number again, 800-642-1234. Mike, some programming changes we ought to talk about, probably starting with a couple of weekend shows. What's up with Says You?
Well, it's ending production. I talked to the producers of the show not that long ago, and they were feeling like it's a whole new world after the pandemic and trying to pull things together, especially trying to pull together live performances, has been so challenging. Very little that you can plan for. And so they decided they're going to be ending production this fall. And no decision yet on what replaces it, but I think we're getting close. And certainly we'll share that a lot right here.
So Says You, Ask Me Another. I'll ask you another about that one, Mike.
Yeah, that's right. Same thing. It's ending production. It was an interesting note from NPR when they announced it a few weeks ago. They said that Ask Me Another never quite found its full audience after 9 years of production. And you know, every organization, NPR definitely, has had to tighten the belts, so to speak. And so they're sunsetting the show.
And here at Wisconsin Public Radio, we've got the WPR Politics podcast, which is not going away forever, just on a little hiatus. What's going on, Mike?
Yeah, just a little hiatus because it's summer vacation. Not much happens in the legislature and usually not much in politics generally. We'll still, of course, be reporting on things if they happen. But they're going to take a little break from the podcast. And I'd invite you, if you are a fan of that, to check out some of our other podcasts, including Beta, which is really interesting, or To the Best of Our Knowledge, the Wisconsin Life podcast, Bookmarks, and Derailed. And by the way, Derailed is something that the creators of that special series about the high-speed train we never got are working on a new podcast series that will be released this fall.
We're talking to Mike Crane, Wisconsin Public Radio Director, at taking your questions about what goes on the air or behind the scenes at Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234 with Louise in Dodgeville. Louise, hi.
Hi. I don't know the radio parlance for, you know, when you're listening to the station and it says, this is Wisconsin Public Radio. It's like a station identification.
Station IDs. You named it. Yep.
Okay. So I was wondering if WPR could include more diverse voices in regard to age and gender and ethnicity, because I think a lot of them sound a lot the same. So I'm just curious about that.
Sure. As a matter of fact, one of the things that many people noticed is we were having some challenges recently with the reliability of our control systems that put on those station identifications, among other things. And we've installed a brand new system. We're still working out some of the kinks. But the reason they sounded really alike is they were. Almost always on the stations that I hear on the Ideas Network, for instance, it was the voice of Cheryl Gasser. And I love your idea, Louise, and probably it'll be a while just because we're still operating with a lot of the constraints of keeping plates in the air called home studios and things like that. But definitely a great idea. I heard something like that on a station out east and thought, someday we have to do that. So thanks for the suggestion.
Thanks for the call, Louise, at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Neil in Madison. Neil, hi.
Greetings, folks. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm calling with two shows I like very much, as it happens, from CBC and the late night BBC news broadcasts. I listen to those frequently and really enjoy them a lot. Thank you for broadcasting them. The other thing is, on some pieces of content, I find an irritating trend. I think it's a fad in radio work to have music over voice. And I find that very irritating because it makes it very difficult to pick out the conversation. If I want to listen to music, I'll tune into a music show. If I'm tuning into a talk show, I want to hear the talk. And particularly if I'm in a noisy environment, music over voice causes me to lose enough that the content's useless to me. So I frequently will tune out when I hear music over voice on shows. Anyway, thanks for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, Neil. And you said one thing that is absolutely a great point. You said music over voice, and sometimes I hear that too. The intention is, and it even is spoken of this in the industry, music under voice. So it's meant to be more subtle than that, and we're getting it wrong if we do it that way where it's over the voice. So a good reminder for us to be very vigilant about that.
Thanks a lot for the call, Neil. We'll go next to Marcus with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hey, Rob. So I love the program. You guys are doing a great job. My thought that I'd just like to toss out there, I'd be interested if you guys could possibly maybe put together some topics on kind of like the environment, the climate, and see if we couldn't come up with something. Just due to it looks like there's going to be flooding and wildfires going across the country here, and I think the federal government's going to start being stretched on resources. My thought is possibly putting together some sort of program to see if there's a way to get people, if they'd be interested in volunteering, like myself, other people I know, to get trained up so that we could assist, you know, in some sort of usable way in the event of flooding or, you know, like a forest fire or whatever else, as opposed to having to wait till the, you know, FEMA and the Red Cross get here.
Interesting topic idea, Mike.
It is, and also I have to tell you, it feels very clear and present today. I was looking at all of the flood warnings for flash floods and things on the maps on the NOAA weather website. And one thing that I noticed, Rob, that I bet you didn't today, during your previous hour of program, you were interrupted. And you probably didn't know because it's an automated system that interrupts our broadcast to put out things like storm watches and warnings and so on. And there was a warning that was given for a tornado. And we heard in the news earlier today of a tornado that hit in a different spot. So very important. And one of the roles, by the way, that to kind of loop back to our very beginning, Gene Purcell was very interested in and helpful in making sure that that network is maintained all throughout the state for all broadcasters, as it's one of the roles of the Educational Communications Board. So a great topic, and also be careful out there and help people as you can.
Thanks for the suggestion, Marcus. And speaking of interruptions, I want to take a moment to thank our listeners for patience. We had some technology upgrades going on. I've heard the analogy of, you know, trying to repair your car while you're driving it. Can you talk a little bit about what has been going on, Mike?
Yeah, we had a system that was called Audio Vault that played all of the audio that wasn't like us talking live. And it was getting harder and harder to get it to work correctly. I think partly because we demanded an awful lot of it with 37 radio stations between the two networks and of course, the digital network of classical music as well. So we have a new one. I love its name. It's called Wide Orbit. And we're still working out the kinks, as you do with every piece of software. But it is, from the reports I'm hearing from different kinds of staff, on-air folks, engineers, it's really a great advance in our work and may facilitate things like the IDs we were talking about a minute ago.
Mike, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us today.
Great to be here.
Mike Crane is director of Wisconsin Public Radio. He comes on the Ideas Network once a month, either on Central Time, The Morning Show, or The Larry Miller Show, to talk about WPR programming and operations. He'll next be on September 13th with Larry Miller. You don't have to wait until then, though, if you have a question or comment. You can call Audience Services here at Wisconsin Public Radio. The number is 800-777-7444. That's 800-777-7444. Or you can email listener@WPR.org. That's listener@WPR.org. Coming up, we'll hear about a project that's working to make the most detailed 3D map of the universe and talk about some of the big questions in science that it hopes to answer. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, an NPR science correspondent tells us about his passion for words, especially words from what is arguably the king of all English language dictionaries, the OED. Now, what exactly is dark matter? The stuff that's all around us in the universe, but we can't really see or detect with the light. That's one of the big questions facing scientists today. Researchers are trying to shed new light on that question by creating one of the most detailed 3D maps of the universe to date. The project is called the Dark Energy Spectroscopic Instrument, also known as DESI. Risa Wexler is a professor of physics at Stanford University. She works with the Stanford Linear Accelerator Center, also known as the SLAC, National Accelerator Laboratory. She previously worked as a spokesperson for the DESI project and plans to use some of the results in her own research. Risa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
Can you help us understand what the DESI project is mapping?
Yeah. So what we are mapping is we're actually looking at the positions of about 40 million galaxies and quasars. And the goal is to actually map as much of the universe as we can. We're trying to understand where the structure is in the universe so that we can actually map out where the dark matter is in the universe and also learn about how it evolves over time.
Dark matter and dark energy, seems like we had a pretty good sense they're out there, but they're really hard to detect. Can you tell us a little bit about those things that are such a fundamental part of our universe?
Yeah, absolutely. So let me first clarify the difference between these two words, because we've already talked about both of them without clarifying. So dark matter is, as far as we know, matter just like, you know, you and me and the stars and planets. But as far as we can tell, it's made of something entirely different. So we think it's some kind of particle that is, you know, not on the periodic table, that's, you know, sort of made of something different than you and me. But it behaves just the same with gravity. And because it behaves just the same with gravity, we can actually see how it behaves, you know, on the scale of the universe with gravity. Now, dark energy is something quite a bit different. We kind of use that phrase as a shorthand for the measurement that we've made that the universe is not just expanding, but it's actually accelerating faster and faster. And if the universe is only made of matter, it can only slow down because matter pulls things together. And when we go out and measure how the universe is expanding, that expansion rate is actually speeding up with time. And because of that, we know there has to be something other than matter in the universe. And that something else, we give it the name dark energy. Now, we don't know what that is. And so DESE is one of the experiments that is really trying to figure out what dark energy is by measuring the universe on the largest scales possible.
I wanted to ask you about the main tool for DESE, or tools, which I understand a ground-based big telescope and lots of robots. How are we mapping here?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we're actually doing is we're trying to measure essentially the 3D positions of a lot of galaxies. Now, there's kind of two kinds of things we do with modern ground-based telescopes. One is basically take pictures, and that gives you a 2D map. What DESE does is that it uses pictures that have already been taken, and then it tries to figure out how far those things are away from us. So that's the 3D map. And it does that by taking a spectrum of each individual galaxy that we identify. So far, all of the instruments that we've ever done this with have taken spectra of a few million galaxies, and DESE is going to multiply that by roughly a factor of 10 to get us something like 40 million galaxies.
Go ahead.
Well, you asked about the robots.
Yes.
So the big advantage of what DESE does that other surveys haven't been able to do in the past is that we have what we call these fiber robots. So the fiber refers to an optical fiber. It's like something that light can go down. So we use those fibers to catch the light of the galaxy and then disperse it so that we can measure its intensity as a function of wavelength. That's called a spectrum. So what DESE is able to do is it has little robots that move those fibers around. In the past, we actually had to position them by hand on the places where we knew the galaxies to be. And DESE allows us to reconfigure. It actually uses 5,000 of these little fiber robots to reconfigure very quickly. So we look at one patch of sky for about 20 minutes, and then we very quickly move those robots around, and we look at another patch of sky, and that gives us another 5,000 galaxies.
We're talking to physicist Risa Wexler at Stanford University about this project to map galaxies around the universe and gain a better understanding of the stuff between the galaxies along the way. And Risa, I understand another big part of your work is to make your own universes, simulate universes with different rules. What are you doing? That sounds cool.
Yeah, that's right. So one of the things I do in my own research is I essentially make models of the entire universe in a computer. And when you do that, you can play around with, you know, what's in that universe. So the kinds of things we play around with include, you know, how much dark matter is there, how much dark energy is there, how do they change as a function of time? And what that allows us to do, we make those models in a computer, and we actually make predictions for where we expect the distribution of galaxies to be in the sky, you know, on a statistical basis. And then with projects like DESE, those maps actually allow us to test those models. So, you know, if we have, you know, universe one that has a little bit less dark energy and universe two that has a little bit more dark energy, DESE will actually allow us, by measuring where the galaxies are, to tell the difference between those two universes.
Right. So then are you hoping to take this work from DESE and bounce back and forth between those results as they come in and then your simulation project?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a key part of what we do, is basically this back and forth. It's one of the things I love about this kind of work, is we're sort of always back and forth between making predictions and testing those predictions. And then, you know, in ideally, we actually break our models, and then we have to go back to the drawing board and try something new.
And as I understand it, Risa, when we look far away at galaxies in the universe, we're also getting a picture of the very distant past, because these signals are coming to us from a very, very long way. What kind of things are we learning about the early days of the universe?
Yeah, that's fantastic. And that's a really, really key point. You know, there's this amazing fact, which is that light has a finite speed. And that means that something far away takes a certain amount of time to get to us. So when we look very far away, it means we're actually, we basically have a time machine. We're basically looking back in the past. And with DESI, we're going to be able to look back about 11 billion years into the past. So we think the universe is about 13.8 billion years old. So we're getting pretty close to the beginning. But you know, right to that spot where we still have a lot of galaxies and quasars in the universe. So with DESI, it's called the Dark Energy Spectroscopic Instrument, because the key thing that is really driving the design of DESI is trying to understand, what is this dark energy? Why is the universe accelerating, and what was it doing in the past? And there's this really interesting fact, is that in the past, 11 billion years ago, we actually know that the expansion rate was slowing down. And then about 7 billion years ago, it started to speed up. And that speed up was due to dark energy basically winning the tug of war against dark matter at that time. So previous surveys have been able to measure that. DESI is going to be able to measure that with exquisite precision. So it's really going to test our theories at much higher precision than we've been able to do before, and especially to test our theories of gravity better than we have been able to do before.
And Risa, before I let you go, do we know when we're going to have a full map from DESI?
So DESI is a 5-year project, and we just started. So the early data actually looks fantastic. We've already got a couple of million objects that we have these measurements for. But it's going to be about 5 years till we have a full picture. But I'm really excited about what we're going to learn along the way. It's a really rich project. You can imagine that, you know, if you're measuring a factor of 10 more objects than anyone's seen before, there's a lot of science you can do with that kind of survey.
Risa, thanks so much for sharing this with us.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
That's Risa Wexler, physicist from Stanford University and the SLAC National Accelerator Laboratory. She was with us today to talk about a project to create the most detailed 3D map of the universe and what it might teach us about gravity and dark energy. Right now it's time for Wisconsin Life. This year marks the program's 10th anniversary on WPR. As part of the celebration, producer Carl Christensen shares one of his favorite Wisconsin Life stories. He composed original music for the piece while exploring the meanings behind all the symbols on the Wisconsin state flag.
We've received many listener questions through WPR's Wisconsin Project. And as we combed through them, we flagged a particular question. It came from Xander, a fourth grader at Mineral Point Elementary School.
Hi, my name is Xander. What do the symbols mean on the Wisconsin flag?
So to help us decipher all the symbols on the Wisconsin state flag, and there are plenty of them, I spoke with Matt Blessing. He's the director of collections at the Library and Archives at the Wisconsin Historical Society.
So the Wisconsin state flag, like a lot of other state flags, was actually adopted in 1913. The main body of the flag is sort of a navy blue. Blue represents traits like wisdom, trust, truth. But in 1913, what was really important was blue represented loyalty. When you look at the elements of the state flag, at the very top of the design, you have the state's motto, Forward. Beneath Forward is a relatively small badger. You have a miner. That's a reflection of early Wisconsin history and lead and zinc mining in the Driftless area, copper mining in northern Wisconsin. And it's a tribute to Wisconsin's workers. And across from the miner on the left-hand side, you have a sailor. And between them is a golden seal that has symbols of four different trades: navigation, manufacturing, mining, and agriculture. And then smack in the middle of the golden shield is a small red, white, and blue coat of arms. And surrounding that coat of arms is the national motto, E Pluribus Unum, one out of many, a recognition of our role in the larger nation.
And then right below the miner, we see a stack of 13, what are those, lead bars?
Right. Directly beneath the miner is a pyramid stack of lead ingots. And that, again, is a little bit of mining history, a little bit economic boosterism about the state's mineral resources. But 13 is important because it's representative of the 13 original colonies.
And then next to the lead ingots, we can see everyone's favorite horn of plenty, the cornucopia.
Right. That's, of course, central to have a cornucopia about Wisconsin's agricultural history. So overflowing out of that cornucopia, you have grapes, apples, and what look like oranges. Now, I don't think oranges have ever grown in Wisconsin, so that might be something that needs to be corrected.
So I'm no Marie Kondo, but to my eye, it looks a bit cluttered. I might call it the Sergeant Peppers of state flags, yeah?
It's a little busy to the modern eye. I think a lot of 21st century people gravitate to simplicity, which is sort of a central element in a lot of flags that attract people. But there aren't as many teaching opportunities with those flags as what you have in Wisconsin. So I still like it. I'm biased because I'm an archivist and a historian. I think we're fortunate to have a flag that we can be proud of and really be used as a teaching tool in Wisconsin schools.
That was Matt Blessing, Director of Collections at the Library and Archives at the Wisconsin Historical Society. Submit your own Wisconsin question, and we might answer it in a future Wisconsin Life segment. Go to WPR.org/Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Carl Christensen.
Coming up, NPR science correspondent Joe Palka tells us about his love of the Oxford English Dictionary and shares some cool words, too. That's next on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Joe Palka is a professional science lover. As an NPR science correspondent, he spends his days reporting on COVID-19 research, NASA spacecraft sent to the planets around the solar system, revolutionary gene editing technology. You get the idea. But Joe has another not-so-secret passion: words, especially weird recondite words. That's an obscure way of saying, I learned today, obscure. So when Joe found himself holed up at home in the spring of 2020, it didn't take long for him to rediscover the Oxford English Dictionary sitting in his attic, and he put it to work. He started sharing words in a love letter to language and the loftiest of dictionaries that he called his Ode to the OED. He's here now to tell us about it. Joe, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
This whole project, I understand, was inspired in part by a seventh grade teacher of yours, a Mr. Glidden. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, it wasn't specific to the OED, he was always, every day we'd come into class and he'd have a word on the board, and they would be weird and obscure words sometimes. Sometimes they'd be just funny words. Sometimes they'd be words we would never, ever, ever use. Like, I don't know if you know what a zarf is, but zarf is one of the more memorable ones from that list. That was a metallic holder for a coffee cup. Or lustrum. Lustrum is the five-year period between censuses in ancient Rome. I mean, your opportunities to use these words are limited, but I like them. I like them. They roll off the tongue. They're curious. They're weird. I don't know. it interests me.
I will say Zarf was a running joke between a former co-host and I for a couple years. So that was one of the few words you said to us that I did know. And I used to joke whenever I got a Zarf at the coffee shop. What do you go hunting for when you go through the OED, this big old dictionary, to find words to share with your email bulletin?
Well, my idea, at least, so yes, I do have, it's the two volume set that you used to be able to get for free when you signed up for Book of the Month Club. And so I signed up and got this giant thing, and it comes with a magnifying glass because the pages are so packed together. You get 4 pages of the original on a single page of this version. But I realized early on that I didn't want to just go search for words, because that can become down the rabbit hole, and I would spend way too long looking for an interesting word. So I came up with a different kind of conceit for the whole thing, which is I made a random number generator for the number of pages that were in the OED, and then I just ran off 100 numbers randomly so that they would match a page a day. I would look for those 100 through those 100 numbers, so that, you know, whatever number popped up on day 17, that's the page I would look on. And so the challenge was to find an interesting word on one page of the OED. And sometimes I got to tell you, it was dull, dull, dull. I mean, you know, set, S-E-T, lots and lots of definitions of set, not very interesting. So those pages were sort of hard to craft. And I just use those, I make up a joke or something like that. But then other days there were a wealth of words. In fact, sometimes it was hard to decide which one was the most, well, what? I don't know. There was no really great criterion. It was the one that appealed to me the most.
Well, here's one on your list that everybody, I think, has probably experienced, even if they didn't know what to call it: petrichor.
Yeah, well, that came from the latest iteration of the list. So it started out as just the O to OED. And I did that for a year, and then I got kind of like, okay, enough already. And I took a break, and then I thought, I'm going to do OED prime or ode prime, which is I pick words and I put them out on prime numbers of the month, or the days of the month that have a prime number. And I asked people to make contributions of words that they liked. And this was one of the contributions. It's the smell of that you get when it's just starting to rain, and the rain is hitting dry dirt or dry leaves or dry ground. And it's very distinctive, and I really love that word. But yeah, petrichor, good one.
Here's another one you've shared. It's just a great sound. I have never heard this before. Stinkibus, if I'm saying it right. Yeah. What is stinkibus?
Yeah, well, stinkibus, I had to double check today on some of these, because believe me, I saw these words, I found them in the dictionary, I wrote them down, I sent them out, and then I forgot them. But stinkibus is a good one. It's bad liquor or adulterated alcohol. So you want to watch out if somebody offers you a stinkibus.
Do you try to work some of these words, Joe, into conversation? I mean, some might be easy, some less so.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about that when you guys called. It was, could I possibly do that? And I did come up with a couple of words that I can work into a conversation. Let's see. What did I have? I had some ideas. Oh, yes. Well, simplum is one of those words, or simpulum is one of those words you don't get to use, because it's a small ladle used for dipping out wine for libations. this is another word that I will never use, just because I don't even know what the definition means. But do you know what a titty is?
I do not.
In the game of Gleek, a titty is the four of trumps. Now, I don't know what the game of Gleek
is. Played a lot of games, sort of, never Gleek.
But I will say, Rob, that I've had it with your Nash Gab, which is impertinent talk.
I get that a lot.
And I'll not have, and you don't dare call me a fleek, because a fleek is a term of reproach, as in, you scurvy fleek, 'tis not naught, you boil eggs in your gruel. Or when we, in the exordium of this discussion, I thought that we were going to be talking only about OED, exordium being the beginning of anything. And I'm talking to you now from my grubbery, which is a room I have dedicated for hard work or study.
Excellent. Well, and someday you can come to Wisconsin and go on a tour of one of our obelisk Kolnitschkis.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, that one.
Which is?
You have those? A light bearer or lighthouse.
We have lots of lighthouses. I've never, ever heard the word that I just mispronounced, I'm sure.
No, no. And I'm hoping to see a smew someday, which is a fish-eating duck. Well, and that... it's not a fish eating a duck. It's a fish-eating duck.
You might be able to see one from an obelisk Kolnitschki. Joe, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us.
You bet.
That's Joe Palka, science correspondent for NPR. Hey, if you want to be added to Joe's email list to get these words, another one coming in 2 days, I think, from the OED, email jpalka@npr.org with OED in the subject line. Coming up, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then we'll find out why Wisconsin's prison and jail populations went down to a historic low during the pandemic and whether some changes could continue into the future. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.